Honorable members, most welcome, Minister, Deputy Minister, DG. Let's resume our proceedings. Honorable Mugam has to go to another meeting, so I'll allow him first to put his question. And anybody who wants to put questions strictly to the DG and Minister, please do so, because the Minister has requested to be released to attend to another urgent business. Over to you, Honorable Horn, did they... yes, you will be next.
Yes. Oh, mine is more of a suggestion than questions. I was wondering if it is not possible to consider using a radio from the court seat rather than municipal boundaries. I've got an experience of a village that is about 5 kilometers from Tata, and then the villagers will have to travel to Libode, pass Mtata, actually pass the magistrate court in Mtata, and go through town, and go to their district magistrate, which is Libode, about 20 kilometers away. And secondly, these municipality boundaries, there is something called, that they are being changed. Today there is a municipality, tomorrow there is none. Where will you be? There is demarcation board, which keeps on changing things. Is it not better than you've got a magistrate in a certain area, and look around it within a particular radius so that at least you are nearer to the people, the services are nearer. These things, because these actually districts used to be the areas controlled by the native commissions. They would decide how many native administrative areas they would have. And if one native commissioner decides, I want that one for a particular reason to be under me, and so on. There was no logic, and the people, they were not actually, had no say. Now, I thought that we would need to change that in a way of transformation. I'm just suggesting, if you can look at it. The second question I wanted to ask now, this one is a question. I thought that I'm sorry to sound like a broken record. I thought that in the Constitution there is a word that says all languages are equal. I didn't know that there are more equal languages than others. Maybe I was mistaken. It seems a transformation is moving from somewhere to somewhere. Why did the court decide that they must first use English? What criteria they were among the languages that were put in there as official language? So I thought that we are 20, how many years? Behind what the Constitution wanted. And I want this just department to say. Let me just give one example. As I say that there are many other examples, not that. There is a saying in the Xhosa. When a question is asked, and the person says, "I diakova," it may mean I hear you. It may mean I understand you. It may mean I agree with you. It may mean I disagree with you. I diagova. So, it's very, very, very crucial. It goes to the heart of justice. A policeman writing a statement in English, and he comes to court, the whole case depends entirely on that statement. And the judge doesn't understand the language, the whole case depends entirely on the interpreter. And it's a problem. Now I'm saying, when I raised this matter with the Chief Justice, he said we must start with in Parliament speaking African languages. Unfortunately, he's not in favor of this. But I'm very serious about it because it affects the most vulnerable people. First thing is that the whole system is foreign to them. They are being dragged into this court. In the African culture, nobody is taken away from your family. If you kill a member of family A, kills a member of family B. By family, I mean extended family. Then members of this family will go to that family and say there is this thing. And then that family interrogates their own child and say, did you do this? Says, yes, we have done it. Then the family goes there to go and ask for forgiveness and pay compensation. Now, the new system, hey, you are wrong. Come here. Put him in prison. Put him in there. Are you guilty or not guilty? The whole thing is strange. Now, we are talking transformation. Can we start with the question of a language? Not saying. Can we start with the question of a language in this system? And say, yes, yeah, people speak that language. And makes it a point that the interpreter is interpreting to the judge or whoever doesn't understand. But the whole system is done in the language of who they understand. It's very easy in the Western Cape. It happens. They speak in Afrikaans, nobody cares. Why can't it be done in other areas? Why must there be an interpreter? Why can't you do it directly? Why must you say we are transforming? For 22 years we have been transforming, trying to move away from English. So I think that I want to stress this thing because I feel, well, I'm suggesting, I'm not really pushing you people, but I'm requesting respectfully. Thank you very much.
Well, don't we have the power even to introduce private members' bills? Why should we lament on these matters and then tell the executive? We have the power, why don't we exercise it? And the demarcation of boundaries, why don't we ask them to say before they are finalized they must be tabled here with debate? Because we represent the people. The people tell us that these boundaries are unfair. Why should we lament and not take action? Honorable Minister.
I think, Honorable Chair, that's fair enough in terms of your role as well as members of Parliament with regard to the issue of the private bills. Yeah, maybe it's a system that we also inherited. Like you're saying, Honorable Mpumulan, I find it very strange if I visit my home court in Toyando, I find the magistrate is vendor speaking, the prosecutor is vendor speaking, and then the accused is vendor speaking. But still, there's interpretation in English. And then I go to the nearby town in Letrekhad, it's just 40 cases. It's former Transvaal, Makado. You get into the court. The accused is Africans. the prosecutor is Africans, the magistrate is African speaking, and then the translation is in English. Is it for the purpose of record, maybe? I don't know. Then, but my understanding is that even if it's for the purpose of a record, I think there are transcribers in court. If you want to reconstruct a record, you can do it. Also, the issue of resources comes in the factor. But I think these are the issues that you are raising, especially. You link it also to the issue of access to justice. The way you are saying they are over, it has got different meanings. Also, in fact, it's in all our languages. The wind, we define it to mean so many things. So these are the issues I think you are, it's an eye-opener on our side. We need to look at that if we are to address also the issue of access to courts. That has to be addressed. I think you've given us a food for thought. We should be able to, when we deal the issue of capacity of interpreters, I think we also need to look at that issue as you are actually raising it. It's noted. I think it's a work in progress. Also the conference that we're talking about, because it's also dealing with the indigenization. We had a visit yesterday of the Canadian minister, wherein they are pushing for the interest of their indigenous people. And then he was telling us to say, ours, we don't have that specific legislation. We've got the constitution that said we need to do that. But I think it's our responsibility to make sure that we realize all those Bill of Rights as enshrined in Chapter 2 of the Constitution. We always say South Africa belongs to all who live in it. I think it's a work in progress. We must also reflect 23 years down the line to say, how far have we gone to move in implementation, and especially the department that is responsible for this. I think constitutional development, as somebody said it earlier, I think it's a mouthful, it's a food for thought.
I suggest that maybe you talk to Department of Higher Education. If we can revive the departments of African languages in universities, we would even create jobs for our people. We will even ensure that our languages don't die. But I don't think that we need another 22 years to debate this issue. The need is there. We must just implement. And DG, I think you are neighbors in Swaziland. Don't do what we are doing here. And it is working there. We can't say there's less justice in Swaziland than here, because they use Swati as the language. So it's just that there's no political will on our side to do the necessary. Maybe we should really do it.
Look, I think the problem is the issue of language of record. And as we said, there was this pilot project in the Northwest, which had Setswana as the language. And so where everybody was Setswana speaking or could speak Setswana, the court was conducted in Setswana. The problem was then what happens with the, if there's an appeal or a review and the record is transcribed. And the then judge president, who's now the Chief Justice, had raised concerns with I think it was more technical issues. That then has to be re-looked at by the department so that we can move forward. So we do have this pilot to build on. We've got to then make the necessary, probably legislative changes to ensure that we can then ensure that it's implemented, it's implementable without problems. On the demarcation issue, if I can just, because Mr. Skosana is unfortunately not, oh, he's here now. There was a question, yeah, maybe if he can just answer it. It was the question of, well, let me, maybe, why follow municipal boundaries and not nearest radius? He'll run through the process that is followed in terms of the consultation. But remember that municipalities are meant to be service delivery points. For example, there's often, and the whole of government is meant to be following that. The issue then maybe regarding Libode is whether then it why it's not part of KSD. It was Libode that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. But, you know, so for example, with the courts, you've got police who have to come and maybe testify. The stations need to be aligned, so the police are going to the same courts. You've got social workers who may have to testify when it comes, or do reports, or appear in court for foster care grants. Okay, so if you've got social workers who are in Umtata, they should be covering the same court as, or they should be going to the nearest court as well. I mean, what Mr. Skosana will tell you is that it's not a hard and fast rule. So it's not everywhere. The intention is to follow as far as possible, the municipal boundaries. But where there's a situation, for example, where public transport to that court is limited, but to another court it is better, then there are those exceptions that are made. But it's not something imposed. There is a public consultation process, and Mr. Skosana can give more details on that.
The question was the municipality boundaries were made for something else. There was a reason for that, which is not what you want to do now. It's not only that, almost all of them. Mtsalo, for example, you pass through Mtata when you go to Mchika. It is under Tsalo. You've got to take 40 kilometers passing Mtata to go to Tsalo. Okay. I'm just explaining that I'm requesting that look at something different. Don't look at the municipality. Even police should do that. Even
Honorable,
the others.
Honorable Mpumalanga, he has said that Skosana must speak, so that after him you can raise that. But what I wanted to say, because we really have to take decisions, that we ask the DG to prepare a report on the pilot project that is done in the Northwest, but not stop there. Come up with recommendations as to what you think should be done in that regard, so that we take this matters forward. But also on the issue that Honorable Mulana is raising, I think in the ministry you have only two politicians, and the two politicians cannot be better than the people of South Africa. So why don't we say that we must listen to the people, what is convenient and what is not convenient, and then the department, the ministry can make their proposal. We weigh that against what comes from the ground. Then we'll find that we are complementing each other as parliament and as the department, because I think we have a common interest to take the country forward. Honorable Advocate Skosana.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Minister, and members. Yes, I just wanted to comment that we are not bound by magisterial boundaries, but municipal boundaries. We are using municipal boundaries as the minimum standard, so that at least the process ensures that within each municipality,
as a guide,
yes. So that the first point is to ensure that within each municipality is a court. But to the extent that there are very large municipalities, the populations, the issues of movements of people around the municipality, you can then have the opportunity of building more courts within one municipality. So you'll find that, for example, you can't have one court for the Tshwane or for the Buffalo City. You can have a number of them with segments, but the first guideline is to ensure that in each municipality, where they've been defined already, there is a court. Then we look within that municipality and see what are the areas where you require even further infrastructure within that municipality. We've been assisted by the CSIR in the process, which basically looks into the movement of people, schools, education, hospitals, police stations, whatever, so that we don't basically frustrate people. They must not go from one point to get a document, to travel one to another document, go to a police station, go to a master's office. So if all those are centered around the common place, etc., within the class, etc. And the same principle we use for the High Court. That's why we said that whilst there must be a provincial division in each province, every magistrate district must serve as a seat of the High Court. So the people in a province should not be traveling to the far end of the province only for the High Court. But the High Court must travel from its seat to each and every district where there are courts, etc. So that's the process we've been following thus far.
Say that maybe you need to develop the criteria for this demarcation so that we talk at the level of criteria other than go to Libode, and then from Libode we'll go to Skukuneland, and then from there we go to Machadas of in Mpumalanga, and we will never finish. Can you agree that we need the criteria? Okay, thank you.
Yes, Chair, I just firstly need your guidance. I have two questions that is directly related to the ministry, but I have a number of other questions which the DG obviously can answer or must answer, or his team. So I just need your guidance as to whether I must limit myself firstly to the two questions to the ministry.
Okay.
Those two questions, Chair, with your indulgence, relates to the legislative program still of the ministry. The one is really in respect of the Maintenance Amendment Act, which was passed by Parliament in 2015 already, but the provisions of which has largely not been implemented. Previously, in an answer to a parliamentary question, for example, it was admitted that the provision to so-called blacklist defaulters have not been implemented because it's in need of empowering regulations, and that answer was given on the 1 year anniversary of the act, September last year, and in the same answer it was said that the regulations are on its way to Parliament, but as we sit here nearly in April 2017, nothing has happened. And from my own investigation, I would gather then that that also applies to, for example, the tracing of delinquent maintenance payers through electronic service providers, etc., etc. And that must be of a worry to Parliament, to say, as has been indicated this morning, we have a very heavy legislative burden, but it also does not help if we pass these acts with some effort and then a year and a half later the implementation can still not take place. So that's the one issue regarding legislative issues. The second is in respect of the Prevention and Combating of Trafficking in Persons Act of 2013, in terms of which also the policy framework by now 1 year after the enactment of the Act should have been with Parliament, but as far as I'm aware, nothing has happened. So I think whilst we normally in political overview or briefing get a fair indication of what's coming, those two have been missing, and it would be good to have some information regarding that. Thank you.
Thanks, and thanks, DG, for the comprehensive presentation. I think my question will touch a bit on what we integrated criminal justice system.
The idea was that we only raise questions to the minister so we can release
and then we can put the other questions later.
Okay, no, it's fine.
Okay.
Proceed, Minister.
I think this one is a clear indication of accountability, and the Deputy Minister will be able to respond, because I'm looking here with how to say, if then we pass an act, and then we say we're going to promulgate regulations, and then we don't do it. But I think there's progress on that matter. The Deputy Minister deals with that. But I note it also to say you are raising an alarm on my part of the handover. But I think the Deputy Minister will be able to respond. How far are we to that effect?
Also said, on our programs, we have space for him to bring everything that he wants to bring.
Chair, thanks. Ms. Pele, who's the DDG for Legislative Development, is just trying to check on what is happening with the Maintenance Amendment Act. I don't know if she's ready yet, but if she's not, if we can give you a response either later today or tomorrow. On the Trafficking Act, the policy, that has taken longer. Part of the problem is the number of departments that are involved in the drafting or that they're involved in the implementation. There is a draft which was sent to me. I had though some concerns with it, so it got so I sent it back. So that's where that is. There is, and you haven't, but just for your oversight provisions, there's one section of the Trafficking Act that is not in effect yet, which relates to foreign victims of trafficking, and that's because of issues with Home Affairs. Relating to the issuing of permits, which we still have to resolve with Home Affairs. Okay, Chair, if then the issue of the Maintenance Amendment Act, if that can, we can respond as soon as we get the information.
Clear state of emergency. I think it's important that the question is raised. And take your time to prepare an answer for us, but we can't put you to terms to say now or tomorrow.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think the first issue, which will also go by way of suggestion, and that you see more often on Mondays, if you go to court, you find that the postponements, all the cases, most of the cases, postponements on a Monday, and I think that has a serious bearing on the fiscal, number one, but secondly is it's also time consuming. So I was checking whether can't we develop a system where when we know that the cases are going to be postponed, we're able to postpone them from wherever everyone is, so that you don't get a big police van carrying people who are going just for postponements on a Monday. Because that is my experience when I used to litigate many, many years ago. Monday, I will know it's postponement. And secondly, those who are going there for a bail, we find that all the bails are issues of trivial issues, drunken driving, those trivial issues on a Monday. So you find that the court is full on a Monday on issues that we could have resolved generally. So I think there must be something done around those particular issues. But secondly, Chair, the issue that, we have so hardened criminals, so when they go to court, they must bring a lot of people who are protecting and so on and so forth. We may need to develop a system where if it's a hardened criminal, we're able to go and run the court where that criminal is arrested. Because, this transformation of the system needs us to be very flexible in terms of whatever we do. But one thing that is there also, Chair, is the issue that the remand. There are people who are in the courts there who are there for almost 5 years. Nothing has been done. So my question will be, maybe the court administration of the department able to detect all those cases? How many are those? So that we find a way of how to deal with them swiftly, because it will be unfair that we keep people for 5 years in a remand there. It affects directly the court administration, sir. So if we're able to pull all those cases and know this is the number of the cases that are in the remand and they've been stayed there for many, many years, and the case is not finishing, and what is our progressive steps in terms of trying to deal with this matter that it gets out of the court administration, sir. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, members of the committee, Minister and Deputy Minister, colleagues. Matters, Honourable Bongo, get postponed for a number of reasons. Sometimes those reasons only come to light on the day, and the prosecutors and or attorneys and other parties are unaware of these reasons until the day of the appearance. Now, in some magisterial districts and regional districts, you have different courts. You have some courts that are designated specifically, for postponements, and you have trial courts. Now, there's also an electronic system in place that's been rolled out in some areas. If memory serves me correctly, and I could be speaking under correction, it's called a remand detention electronic system, where instead of accused persons having to be physically brought to court, their matters are postponed via video linkage. I possibly could speak a bit more about that tomorrow. I'll do a bit more homework on it this evening and speak a bit more about it during my briefing to the committee tomorrow. Thank you. But before I stop, the Department of Justice, the NPA, Correctional Services, and the police and other stakeholders meet here on a regular basis, monthly, and there's a committee that looks at old cases in the sense where people have been in detention for a considerably long time, 2 years at a time or longer. And every effort is made within the criminal justice system to fast-track these matters so that justice can be dispensed with as speedily and efficiently as possible. Of course, not all matters can be dealt with speedily. And there are various reasons why matters take longer than others. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. It was just one issue that Honourable Bongo raised, the issue of bail for people who've been arrested for drunken driving. And I think it reflects the tension in the system. You can get... if you speed, I think the NDPP can correct me, I think it's if you speed up to 160, if you're over 160, then you get arrested. But then you don't have to appear in court, you can get police bail. You get taken into custody, but you can, when do you get police bail? Because why I'm raising it is that the Road Traffic Institute, or what's it, authority, are asking for us to tighten the laws relating to bail of traffic offences. So I can't remember the exact detail, but they are saying basically they think it's wrong or not sending a serious message that people who get arrested for speeding, and I may have the categories wrong, that they can get police bail. They in fact want them to be like the driving under the influence people and have to go and appear in court to send a more serious message. So they're in fact lobbying the ministry for a change to the schedule in the Criminal Procedure Act relating to who gets police bail. So I'm just saying there is that tension. We've got our jails full. A lot of the problem is minimum sentences, but we get asked to add more and more crimes as minimum sentences because of the serious nature of those crimes. So it's a broad attention.
The integrated criminal justice strategy seeks to address all these issues that we are raising. I think as we present it to members, you start to understand the value chain, because we had identified all these weaknesses that the honorable member is raising now, as it is to say. We have been operating also in silos. That was the major issue, to say that now, like, you know, holidays, people will be arrested, drunken driving, all offenses like weekends. There's a lot of people that are said to commit crimes over weekends, like you're indicating, to say. I think we need to go back and relook also in our system also. Are we also not contributing as a criminal justice system? The moment we say I'm arresting somebody, our state of readiness, like you're saying, to say we are going to prosecute, also is also contributing to the unpreparedness of the official who are supposed to do the work, to say they will lock you in on a weekend. They don't charge you, they don't do anything, wait until Monday. Even if it's a travel of nature, then the backlog also is also contributing. But I'm saying then, if we start to talk to each other, as we're indicating, because also at the end of the day, the relevant factor is the overcrowding in prison. I had an opportunity as I was acting to visit one of the prisons, just to understand this thing, to say then, you see people, the prison is 200% overcrowded. I think when correctional service come to present their report, they will deal with that. But it's solely based on us as the JCPS not talking to each other. And then once they get out of the police detention, they go to jail. Nobody's interested to also track, to say this person has been sitting in prison for 5 years. And it also comes to the issue of access to justice that we're dealing with. To say certain people opt not to say, like, based on lack of understanding that, because the magistrates say you are entitled to legal aid. Some people opt to say, because of legal knowledge, I don't want a lawyer. And the implication is that then you're forced to stay in prison for a longer period. Nobody even follows up that you've never been tried. Also the system, because there's an ICT element that is coming in terms of the strategy, to say, from day one when JB gets arrested, we'll be able to track where is JB is. I'm not saying you're going to be arrested. We're able to track him until the end, up to the sentence. That's why the strategy seeks to address most of the problem. Honorable member, I must assure you, once we implement that, because what I like about it, I think there's commitment at the level of cabinet also to say, as clusters now, they must start to talk to each other so that we resolve this problem. Because this is the thing that is, I was asking JB to say, this thing started in 1998. Why are we still here? We've not yet implemented this. But I think now, the one that is there, it brings everybody on board. And then there will be an IMC that will lead to meet on a regular basis, also to track the progress and report back to cabinet. I think most of the issues, they are going to be attended through the strategy. Hence, I'm saying, Chairperson, I think as soon as possible, we need to come, like when we come to present our annual report, that presentation on the strategy will assist also to take members through, because most of the concerns that they are raising now, they are addressed in the strategy. But I think once it's approved by cabinet, nothing bars us from sharing it with you so that you start to also understand what is happening in it.
Another issue, Minister, is when you go to those courts on Monday, a long queue of people who must apply for legal aid, which means the legal aid offices must process those applications. And at the same time, we have the so-called unemployable graduates. Can't we make it compulsory that all law schools must have community services for their students? Then on Mondays, you deploy those students at the courts. They must deploy people, defend people free of charge. Why should we people urinate in the streets? We must get a lawyer for them. And then people are drunk. We must get lawyers for them. Where do we get money to do all these things? Are we not over-democratizing the system? And people will say there's academic academic freedom. Those professors are paid by us, and then you, if you want to change, you must go and plead with them to change. I think let's look at this. Community service, we can't be producing LLBs who don't even understand a simple procedure in the criminal law court. They should not get the degrees before they've done community service. Community service must be part of the curriculum. Indigenous language must be part of the curriculum, and we must just take decisions. Okay.
We'll answer you. Thank you, Chair. He said we can release everybody, so I just asked who will answer. Is it him or? thank you, Chair. I want to first of all go back to the three key challenges identified by the department, and in respect of the critical posts and the budgetary constraints in respect of the salary component of the civil service, I have two questions. The one is, we always as Parliament hear of only critical posts being filled, but then on the other hand sometimes we get a report that certain basic service delivery failures can be ascribed to the problems with budgetary provisions for salary. So I think the question must be asked, what specific systems are in place to evaluate whether a post is critical for service delivery, and how the department goes about to identify or to deem a post non-critical to service delivery. Then secondly, and this is rather a comment, it's interesting to note that the department is looking towards, let's say, automation of certain services through ICT rather than employing warm bodies, but yet that brings us back to the point of saying over the years the department has literally spent hundreds of millions of rand and without real progress with the integrated criminal justice system. So it would beg the question, why will the department this time around be successful in automating some of the service delivery rather than entrusting it to people?
Who made the finding that they spent millions and millions?
No, well, that's on record, Chair, also by way of information that the minister who's on sick leave has given Parliament as recently as last year. Then, Chair, in respect of the infrastructure budget, it is also a very worrying and to a certain extent problematic report we are receiving. We, on the one hand, hear of a shortfall this year of 731 million rand, but what is not added there is that in February when the department came to brief us, it was envisaged that on this year's budget, which is to end on Friday, there was expected to be a 27% over expenditure. And although that states that the indication was that certain internal arrangements was made to try and mitigate that or try and limit the over expenditure, I think we are to see the full picture also in need of what was actually the situation in respect of over expenditure. And then, Chair, I think we to also have the full picture are in need of more detail regarding the planned programs for the outer years, which has now been cancelled. because that can have a major impact on service delivery. And then it is of a big concern that the lack of budget for planned maintenance by DPW is on the one hand listed as one of the challenges faced by the department, but on the other hand, we also know from financial reporting that in the department itself, there's been a decrease in the adjustment budget in respect of funds for maintenance. So if DPW is not budgeting for maintenance at our court facilities, and justice say, but we are faced with budgetary constraints, and the proof is there that last year in the adjustment budget it was adjusted downwards, aren't we creating a situation where we will be faced with unusable courts in certain areas very soon? Just bear with me. Just want to get past. Then in respect of also the shifting of funds, and I've now referred to the integrated criminal justice system where some funds was also shifted last year, it would be good if we can just maybe get a bit of good news in respect of the rollout of Majapay, which is supposed to finally solve the headache of years regarding the third-party funds. And there was also the contemplation that given the Auditor General's finding of the aging ICT scenario at the Guardians Fund, that Majapay could be extended there, what the possibility is and whether that is still contemplated. Then, Chair, in respect of some of the targets now in the APP of the department, I think we as a committee must be worried. On the one hand, we know and we are aware of that the IG has previously lambasted not only this department but more or less everyone who's reporting here about targets that's not really measurable. So on the whilst I think we can have sympathy for the fact that in respect of targets something had to be changed, there is however still some worrying issues. The first one I want to raise and maybe receive clarification on is on the issue of so-called internal consequence management. Previously there was very specific targets regarding the fight against corruption internally in the department, and we've received some real figures in the past, but now some of those targets and indicators have been removed, and it begs the question why that is the case. Then coming back to the infrastructure issues, Chair, coupled with the really depressing budgetary situation the department is faced with, I think it must be of worry to us that the trend seems to continue regarding on the one hand the very slow progress with capital projects, and on the other hand the resultant escalation in costs. So we've had, for example, both the Limpopo and the Mpumalanga High Courts, which ran way over time and of which the cost escalated very heavily. And now we again have the situation that in respect of certain upgrades at Gauteng Palace of Justice, the new Mamelodi Magistrates Office, Bulawayo Magistrates Court in KZN, and Welkom, in all of them there's, well, they use different words from project might exceed contractual duration to delays to slow progress. And then we're back at the situation where we've in the past advocated with the department that these constant talks with DPW simply isn't enough, and at some stage there was contemplated that from justice side there would also be project managers employed to try and see whether that couldn't speed up. So the question I really want answers to is, what have we learned, and how can we prevent this situation of the slow progress also resulting in over expenditure in terms of these projects? One of the other indicators that has been changed, and I think which if we look carefully at the wording, which I think we need an explanation for, is previously we had an indicator or a target talking to the number of sexual offences courts to be, or court rooms to be established, but now in this APP it's been amended to read number of court rooms adapted in line with the sexual offences model. Now, why I say there's a possibly a significant difference is, I think previously the indicator, in my view, talked to dedicated sexual offences courts. Well, now one would think that these courts must double up or just be used on an ad hoc basis as sexual offences courts. So I think we are in need of an explanation. I think previously everybody agreed that these sexual offences courts added value to the criminal process regarding sexual offences, and I would not want to hear that we are now diluting the plans the department previously had in respect of sexual offences courts. Chair, also in respect of backlogs, and I know we're seeing NPA tomorrow, in previous briefings we received from the department, there was a high increase in the number of cases on the backlog roll, and then it was explained that there was a different methodology being used, but now it would seem that I don't know whether they've reverted back to the old methodology again, because the number has come down significantly, despite the fact that it is indicated that there's no significant progress being made with backlogs. So if we can just get an explanation as to what methodology exactly are being used now, and what maybe compare apples with apples. Then, Chair, another one of the indicators that's been removed is in respect of the implementation of the TRC compensation. And we know that as a committee that it's been something that's been raised year after year, briefing after briefing, without any real progress being made. So I think we as a committee must ask why these indicators have now been removed completely. Hopefully it's not that we forget about the obligation of the department to finalize these issues. And then, yeah, while the deputy minister is still here, that's another one I forgot to ask when the acting minister was here, what is now the situation regarding this policy on the appointment of insolvency practitioners? We know there was court findings and then an appeal, and the appeal finding in the negative to the department's appeal has been circulated to us as committee members. So we want to be informed as to the way forward in respect of the need for transformation there. And as I do every year, I repeat my plea that we, as part of the whole transformation issue in respect of insolvency practice, and I know the Deputy Minister has referred to the Act as one of those that must be overhauled, every year I plea for some sort of internal ombud for those people who feel aggrieved in respect of the way they've been treated by their liquidator appointed by the court or the master of the court. And then lastly, Chair, if I may, another one of the issues that in terms of information before this committee may possibly have to be looked at is the Contingency Fees Act. We know that the Act was sort of a first attempt at getting this right in South Africa, but nearly 20 years later, it is unfortunately so that one comes across many accusations of abuse in this regard, so it would be good to hear also whether there is an official response coming also specifically after the Chief Registrar of the Eastern Cape Division's comments in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Deputy Minister and DG, it's a practice in this committee that you don't have to answer everything. Some questions are homework, so you can go back and prepare a written submission and send it, because otherwise you may have to give a keynote address to this committee to deal with these matters. But I'm also interested in the question of the TRC. We never got any satisfactory report. Can we request that a comprehensive report be provided? I think we are interested in having a closure on that matter. Over to you.
Jefferson, thank you very much indeed. We have noted the questions that have been raised, especially those that require detailed responses, that we would rather we go back than give you written responses on those. What we will try and deal with now are those matters which lend themselves to being disposed of fairly quickly right here and now. Let me say that perhaps the questions from Honourable Member Bongo have been somewhat dealt with, together with those that were raised by Honourable Member Horn earlier on in the chair, so I will not venture into those right now. What criteria is being used to determine which posts are critical? My colleague from Corporate Services, I'm sure, will add to this if necessary. But essentially what we look for would include factors such as which posts would, if not filled, negatively impact the ability of the department to fulfill its mandate. And whether that work couldn't be done in other ways, or we couldn't improve our efficiencies through the use of technology and the like. If the answer is that without a particular post being filled, the department's work would be negatively impacted upon, we then have to consider whether or not we have resources to fill that post. But if you need a more comprehensive response on the criteria, I'm sure my colleague from Corporate Services can assist me there. Would you like to do that, sir?
Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chairperson, DM, and honourable members. We have a first report of a phase one exercise that had been completed, that is being considered for approval, related to the 9.5% vacancy rate that we had as at the end of February, and members would know that is below still the average benchmark of 10% that is acceptable in the public service. We then also, there is a HR post-review committee. That post-review committee has the terms of reference. The terms of reference also indicates that our service delivery points, our service points, are the first area of priority. So when I say service points, it's not just the courts itself, but it's also state attorney offices. There is also service points for client departments, offices of the Master of the High Court, and family advocate offices. Then there's the next level, obviously, that then translates to the direct support structures for those service points. And in our case, the first point would be the regional offices, who then provides administrative support and corporate support services to those service points then directly. It was important that we had embarked on this exercise, and I'm saying it's a phase one, because we've also realized that it might have to be a process that we would have to go to a phase two, phase three, and phase four, in order for us to continue to reassess the budget available for vacant posts, and then our priority areas in terms of filling that. So, Honorable Owen, there is, like I indicated, your question was, what specific systems are developed to make sure that service delivery needs are not compromised? That is the process that we have in place. And like I said, we have a first phase report for implementation in the first quarter of the next financial year, which would be next week.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think Advocate Basson will deal with the question regarding motor pay, and Advocate Skosana will deal with the infrastructure questions. The Deputy Minister, I'm sure, will deal with the insolvency question as the last.
Let's be brief. I can see people are dozing, including myself.
DG, thank you, everybody. We've just agreed that Mr. Sarathi is a little closer to the Mojapai. I'm holding the funds very safely there, and I'm watching him.
Thank you. The question was maybe give a quick background or progress report on Mojapai. Probably a bit of background. Mojapai is the system that we use to manage our third-party funds. The progress is this. We have now rolled out MojaPay in Northern Cape. We've rolled it out in Northwest, and we are halfway through Free State. It probably makes sense that as we say that, we also say that where we are from a benefit perspective is that when we started with MojaPay, we were able to pay 45% of our beneficiaries within 1 or 2 days. We have seen that number from July to now in January increasing to 93%. When it comes to EFT payments and payouts, we have seen that number improving from 60% to 83%. But I think it's probably fair that we give a written report on this thing, because I think there's a lot that we can say on MojaPay. But we are planning to finish MojaPay at the end of this December, which is 2017. It's also fair to say that we are not going to roll out MojaPay for the next 2 months as we focus on the audit. The other question, if I may just deal with it, was about MojaPay equivalent for guardian funds. We have done the analysis of the process. We think that it will fit into guardian funds will fit into the MojaPay environment. We will be starting that project in the next financial year. Thank you.
Briefly, Honourable Chair, and I just wanted to indicate to other members that the meeting between our minister and the minister of Public Works has already been scheduled. In fact, it could have taken place just immediately after the opening of Parliament, but it was rescheduled due to minister's conditions. And there have been task teams have been established in the two departments. We'll present to this committee how we intend to change the whole infrastructure and management aspect. Part of it is around the issue of devolution of functions. Minister has already indicated that there's an intention to create expertise in the department to manage those infrastructure-related matters. As currently now we don't have, we only got lawyers. Everything, water beds and everything we call public works, even to give us the estimates in terms of what amounts we need to provide solutions, etc. The intention is that we do that work inside. We have our own people who understand the construction, who will do the costing, who will seek the relevant intervention from outside, and only go to public works where the delegations are beyond those delegations that we have from the department side. And I think that's going to create a lot of improvement across the infrastructure matters. But we'll provide this committee the detail on the outcome of the meeting of the two ministers and how the process will unfold when we submit the written report to this house. Thank you, Chair and Minister.
Chairperson, before the Deputy Minister has the last word, let me deal with the question on the TRC. I'm advised, Chairperson, that the committee has in fact been favoured with a copy last year of a report on the TRC, so that the team has not been invited to come and speak to it. Suffice it to say that at this stage, various elements of the TRC work have in fact been concluded. For an example, the individual reparations have been fully paid to people who've come forward, who've been listed in the TRC reports to come and who've claimed those benefits. Secondly, parts relating to education. Those aspects are now being transferred to the Department of Higher Education because the scholarships are in fact being handled through NESFAS at the moment. So we believe that those matters are now being dealt with by the Department of Higher Education. But I suppose we still retain the responsibility to make sure that those beneficiaries or victims, if you like, still do get the benefits that are due to them under those programs. The same would hold for matters relating to housing. The Department of Human Settlements is working with us now, and there is a process underway working towards the building of houses for those people whose homes were destroyed in the course of those human rights violations. So the report is there, Chairperson. I think we can come back to the committee to have a more fuller discussion on those matters.
I'm not sure that we should spend government money bringing you here just to discuss a report. Why don't we just submit the report?
Yes.
We circulate it, members must read. These trips are very expensive.
Indeed, Chairperson.
Yeah, so just send the report, we'll study it. If there are matters arising, we can discuss amongst ourselves, and then if there's something critical, we can request you to come. But bring a big delegation to come and discuss the report, I don't think it's
worthwhile. Much appreciated, Chairperson. On the other matters that are no longer appearing on the APP, like internal consequence management and several others, we have removed matters that we believe are not transformational from the APP. It doesn't mean they are no longer being undertaken. Many of those have been moved to our operational plans, which means that it's work that needs to be done, but it's not work that we have included in the annual performance plan. Because whether or not you do those things, in our view, those matters are very much inward-looking, and we thought that we shouldn't necessarily be encumbering the annual performance plan with those matters, but that they are in our operational plans. If from time to time the committee would like to hear how it is that we're dealing with these matters, the committee is free to pose questions, and we will float them as and when they are raised. And of course, the target information is available. Thank you very much.
Yeah. the department has done very well, answered things to our satisfaction, and then the minister just want to give, deputy minister will give you a vote of thanks.
There were a few answers or questions. I think the issue on the sexual offences courts, there were two sort of sections involved. The relevant person from the department is not here. I don't know if Advocate Majokweni is coming tomorrow, so she could deal with those. But I think the issue is the full model of a sexual offences court is quite extensive, and it's better to, even if one can't supply all those services, to at least put some of them in place. I mean, the full ambit of services are separate entrances and things like that, whereas at least the bare minimum is a room where the victim can testify, can see the accused, place for a child to rest, that kind of thing. So, you know, it's but I think that Advocate Majokweni can go into more detail, although she's acting in another position now, but with that tomorrow. And then similarly, I think the issue of backlogs or the issue of targets, those are more targets that the NPA has because of the issue of the independence of the judiciary, so they are setting their own targets. But just to say that I have the delegated responsibility to appoint acting magistrates, and many of the regional court, many of the backlog courts are staffed by acting magistrates. And one of the things that I do is check on their case finalization rate and the number of hours that they're sitting. And there's quite a big difference. Now, we know, obviously, each case is different. One case can be quite simple, dealt with in a short space of time, it's done. Another one might take days. But there's quite a big difference between different presiding officers. Some will finalize a number of trials a month. Others will finalize very few. But obviously, because they're acting appointments, one is able to sort of say to them, if your finalization rate doesn't increase, you're not going to be reappointed. And a few of them haven't been reappointed. Some of them did suddenly show a remarkable increase. But the problem is, you know, that's because they're acting for short spaces of time. Once a presiding officer, a magistrate, is appointed, they're appointed. They're there full-time. And any complaint against their progress or lack of it would then have to go to the Magistrates Commission. Or the JSC if it's a judge. So those are some of the problems in terms of the independence of the judiciary. Once you've got a judge or a magistrate, nobody's going to tell them what to do or how to run their court. Then on the issue of the insolvency regulations, look, I've been in discussion with the Director General. We've still got to have discussions with the Minister, which were affected by his health issues. So we're still discussing how to approach the issue, whether to appeal or whether to redo the issue. And we can then let you know the response shortly. As far as the Act, I think it's coming towards, it's on the program to be tabled by the end of the year. Yeah. No, it's not, it would be what, next year? Next year, and the issue of mechanisms to deal with complaints against the insolvency process is something that is being addressed in the bill.
Okay. We should thank the DG for hitting the ground running. We can see results, but you shouldn't have brought Mr. Mutiba today. He's restless. He thinks tomorrow is too far. I guess this brings us to the end of the session. Just Mr., can we adjourn? I think. No, we see the results, and thank you very much. Have a nice afternoon.
No, that I didn't see myself.